Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for July 18th, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Melody, and happy World Listening Day.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
There you go. It encourages people to take time to listen. And this is kind of in honor of our listeners out there who do that 5 days a week. Listening plays an important role in understanding one another. It's also important when trying to understand the world around us. Probably hear sounds in your natural environment every day. If you live in a city, those sounds might include first responder sirens, garbage trucks, barking dogs, what have you. In the country, sounds of rustling leaves in the wind, the babbling of a brook nearby, and birds singing and roosters crowing as the sun rises. And so today, and all days for that matter, tune in to what your partner, friend, or colleague is saying to you. Then respond. As Stephen Covey once said, Melody, first seek to understand, then to be understood. And that's all I have to say about that.
Well, you know, it is important to listen. And, you know, especially to when you're outside, when you really, it's just awesome, especially when you're in the mountains or, you know, wherever, the birds and the bees.
Crashing waves at the beach.
Birds and the bees. And
or in the trees.
Wasn't there a song?
And the moon up above. That's the power of love.
Anyway, all right. Well, let's see what. Let's listen to see
that's
what.
That's February 14th.
But. Okay. Let's listen. I was going to say let's listen and see, but can you do both at the same time? Listen and see? Of course you can. Gold's up $22 today at $1,977. Had a high of $1,984. Silver's up 25 cents at 25.11. Platinum was up $5 at 993. Palladium was up 31 at 1,353. The USDX today was a little stronger, 0.07, still below 100, 99.96. I was waiting for it to be 99.99, but no, it's off a few pennies. The paper crude oil was up $1.60 at 75.75. And the paper markets today, the Dow popped more than 300 points, 366 to be exact. The S&P was up 32 points, and the NASDAQ was up 108. So the Dow Jones was only up a little over 1%, but it the numbers, 1% is equals to 366 points. Asia, they were still negative except for the Nikkei. Europe was positive, of course, kind of expected that. 10-year yield is down 3.79. It was just last week. It was a little over 4. How quickly things change. Natural gas was higher by almost 4.5%, 2.62. So that's pretty much it in the scheme of things today for the precious metals markets. Gold has been showing very strong, moving up to that 2000 level again. So that's good for gold. And silver, it was just a couple of weeks ago, it was ready to break 22, and now we're 25. So there's deals on silver eagles. There's deals on 90% silver. There's deals on 1 ounce silver round. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Builder sentiment today for single family homes. Well, guess they're happy again. Rose 1 point.
Yay.
In July. Well, we're only halfway through the month of July to 56. And this is Wells Fargo Housing Market Index. So the National House National Association of Home Builders, Wells Fargo. This is the seventh, this is the seventh straight month of gains, highest level since June of 2022. And we have to remember that anything above 50 is considered a positive sentiment. Low supply, maybe, in the resale market is driving demand to new construction. But those higher mortgage rates, you know, is putting a lot of pressure on the market. And builders continue to remain cautiously optimistic about market conditions. Remember, builders have to build. So they don't care if they overbuild. Builders have to build. The quarter point rise in mortgage rates over the past month is a stark reminder of the stop and start process that the market will experience as we see the Fed continuing to tighten the cycle, Dave. And again, we had the 30-year mixed mortgage cross over 7% in May.
This month, too. Yeah, but it's only come down a tad in the last week, 6.81%, I think I saw. And those higher rates definitely straining affordability in the market where prices for existing homes are rising still again. I think, what do we see? The latest Freddie Mac numbers, 396,000 roughly, the median home price, new home price in the nation. Well, of the home builders index's three components, current sales conditions in July rose 1 point. To 62. Buyer traffic increased 3 points, but only to 40, but still the highest reading since June last year. And sales expectations for the next 6 months actually fell 2 points to 60. Now they believe the drop in expectations is due to that jump in interest rates and its resulting hit to affordability. Now, despite these higher mortgage rates, builders are using fewer incentives. I mean, just 22% of builders reported cutting prices this month, down from 25% in June and 27% in May. They believe it may be a function of their growing sentiment that their future is brighter. Well, sales of newly built homes in May, the latest available, jumped 13% over April and 20% higher than a year earlier. That's according to the Census Bureau. Now, even though that median price of $396 is, I think, high, meaning it's, I could see how it's not affordable for a good number of particularly entry-level buyers, that's down 7% from last year in May. So we'll see what happens in the next couple of months. We have some other discussions on housing later in the program, Melody.
You know, it's funny with, you know, with the reports of inflation easing and so forth. Now everyone is saying that, oh, gee, we're not going to have a recession now. I mean, it's like, what's changed? What really has changed? You know, the inflation numbers, the prices are still the same. What's come down in price? Used cars? Okay, good. Everybody go out there now and buy a used car. You know, gasoline we saw come down. Okay. What else has come down in pricing that we use, that people use? Everything is still going higher in pricing, or the quality. It's compromised. You're still getting less for your money because your dollar is weakening. So when these people like Goldman Sachs comes out and say, hey, you know, we don't think there's the odds of a recession happening over the next 12 months. Nah, that's not going to happen. Really? But then we go on and we talk about, Dave, about the rolling recessions. Well, how's that work? So we have rolling recessions. We knew they've copped, they've admitted to a construction, a real estate property recession, housing recession. So that only affects those people, and that's okay. It doesn't filter down. It doesn't spread out. There's no multiplication. There's no none of that seems to matter, Dave. I mean,
well, you know, Goldman, too big to fail analysts there say that they think there are strong fundamentals now to expect further easing of inflation.
And what do they know? They keep getting bailed out, don't they?
Well, yeah, they have a slightly tainted view of the world. I don't know. It seems like a pretty upbeat forecast to me. You know, it just, you know, they must run out of things to write about in these research notes to clients because, and I'm surprised they're not more cautious or circumspect. It just seems too soon to be predicting, you know, a soft landing. I mean, everyone has their opinions and everyone has their computer models. But there's also something like good old common sense.
Well,
again, with go ahead. A lot of people hurting out there. It just seems, again, it seems a bridge too far to be talking about. You know, not having to worry about a coming recession when, in fact, several industries have been and are continue to be in one. Go ahead.
Well, when you get bailed out by the government, I guess you'll say whatever they tell you to say, especially when we're heading into a big election year. And the thing that they're running on is how great the economy is and so forth. So, even though if you really take a hard look at everything, things aren't all that rosy out there. And if something just tips just a little bit, it's going to be a lot worse than what they ever thought of. So we know this. Heading into election, the first thing they always try to do is make everything seem rosy and everything. So, you know, hey, if you got one area in a recession, I would think that means, you know, we're in a recession, but they just made it a little bit nicer and gentler way of presenting it. You know, they said various sectors, housing, manufacturing, technology. Technology and housing, that's probably 80% of our economy. consumerism is, but I mean, how big are those sectors? I mean, that has a pretty powerful impact across this nation. Technology and maybe not so much manufacturing, but housing. There's some economists, as I mentioned, call these rolling recessions. And again, they're softening and looking because of these rolling recessions that it could achieve a soft landing scenario. Ask the guy that's having a hard time feeding his family if it feels like a soft landing to him. You know, the only ones that feel a soft landing is pretty much those that are invested in Wall Street. because they will not let that fail as long as they can. And so as long as you're there, you're okay. But the generally accepted definition of recession from the Natural Bureau of Economic Research is a significant decline in economic activity that is spread across the economy and lasts more than a few months. That isn't exactly what we've seen in the last 18 months. They're trying to still tell us we're not falling into a recession. But we are. But they're using these rolling recessions to describe periods during the 80s and 90s. This is all according to the San Francisco Fed. Well, the late 90s wasn't bad. How was the 80s for you? How was the early 90s? You know, when you had the Asian contagion in the middle 90s. So anyway, Dave.
Well, you know, to answer your question, I mean, GDP currently, and these are close to accurate numbers, might be off a percentage point or less, but 70% of our GDP is personal consumption, 18% business investments, 17% government spending, and the rest exports. So it comes out to be negative, the net exports, because of the trade deficits, but that's just a point of information there. Go ahead.
Wouldn't the housing and that would fall under the, and technology would all be under the 70%.
Yeah, I think
consumerism.
Most of it is. Some business, some of the housing component, I think, is in business investment, as I recall. But you know, look, back in the 80s and 90s, a number of sectors fell into negative growth. Manufacturing, oil, natural gas, defense industry, but not enough to tank the economy per se. This time, the housing industry experienced a real deep contraction last year, for a good part of it anyway, and certainly the first to feel the impact of the Fed's rate hiking campaign. And I don't mean just the builders, I mean households, individuals, citizens, residents who are looking to buy their first home or, you know, to move up, buy a vacation home, what have you. We saw the sharpest decline in the final 6 months of last year when residential investment fell 27% in the third quarter, 25% in the fourth. I don't know. The housing recession may be slightly less steep than what it has been. At least residential investment activity is declining less. Declined just 4% in the first 3 months of this year. Whether or not there's going to be further healing, we'll know more, I think, by the early part of the fourth quarter this year. There's a tailwind from recent legislation that's pouring billions into infrastructure projects here in the country that will manufacture goods here by mandate. So I think we need to stay tuned for the upcoming GDP reports. First for the second quarter, which I think is out next week, and then in the coming months.
Anyway, I'm not going to get... Anyway, let's go ahead. And this all comes at a time when monetary policy, as it continues to tighten, people are getting... It's a little more difficult to get loans. This is new data coming from the New York Fed. The bank reports that in June, across a number of fronts, credit was the hardest to get in years. Fewer people seeking out loans. The report's findings were compiled as part of the New York Fed's monthly survey of consumer expectations, with respondents polled every 4 months about credit access issues. Well, if they can't get credit, they're not going to be buying, because that's the only thing that they can buy with is from loans and debt. Mm-hmm. Banks said that the overall rejection rate for credit applications rose to its highest level since June of 2018 and stood at 22% from 17% in February. We'll close this up when we get back from the break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom with Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And heading into the break, we were talking about how it's much more difficult for folks to borrow money, to get loans. This country is based on that money for loans and credit from those consumers to keep buying. So what happens when you can't get money to spend? Rejection rates for credit cards and credit limit increases also gained ground. The rejection rate for mortgages stood at 13% in June from 10% in February. That's probably because of all of those subprime lenders who get discounts now. Well, maybe a lot of them went and tried to get homes, and they were still rejected. Who knows? The rejection rate for mortgage refinancing jumped to 21% last month from 16% in the prior survey, Dave.
Well, the only thing I think worth adding is the survey found what it called the average probability that a loan will be rejected sharply is their word, the Fed's word, to record levels for auto loans, credit cards, credit limit increases, and housing-related credit, particularly for credit scores under 700. Survey found just a modest pullback in those seeking loans to 40% of those surveyed, the lowest level since October 2020. but noted that respondents who plan to apply for credit over the next year ticked up just a tad, 0.3 percentage point, still 26% are going to apply for a credit. Don't know if that's new or additional, could be a combination. In any event, we are still a nation swimming in lots of debt, and it doesn't appear to be going down anytime soon, if ever, Melody.
Agreed. Our economy is based on debt. So here's an interesting story as we're heading into the second segment of the program today. New vehicle inventory at dealers in the U.S. is continuing its slow and steady climb upward. According to Automotive News, electric vehicles, okay, data from Cox Automotive show that there are an estimated 1.95 million vehicles sitting unsold on dealer lots right now. That works out to a 53-day supply, which is up 75% from the same time just 1 year ago. It's also up very slightly from a month earlier when supply stood at 1.93 million vehicles. The big reason for this 53-day average supply comes down to one thing, EVs. Those, according to the outlet, those vehicles have 103-day supply. That makes it the only segment other than the ultra-luxury and the high-end luxury to have supplies on the north side of 100 days. Dave.
Sorry, I'm a little distracted. I'm actually trying to figure out what's the 53-day supply, what that means. But anyway, that's for another time, I guess. But Cox does point out that full-size cars were a close second, I guess, at 99 days, but they say that's not really surprising. On the flip side are compact and mid-size cars and crossovers, which reportedly have the tightest inventories. Now, from Auto News' reporting, inventory levels are among the lowest of lower-priced vehicles. Stock seems to grow in proportion with price. And that's not too much of a surprise. I mean, who really has the money to buy an expensive car right now? Another interesting little fact is that Toyota and Honda have 9 of the top 10 vehicles with the smallest supply among the 7 major automakers who still report monthly sales and inventory figures. 6 saw their day supply level increase last month between 1 and 4 days. Only Volvo stayed level.
Well, that means nobody's buying EVs.
Well, that's
the point. That's
the point.
And, yeah. You know, and I don't blame them.
On the one hand, you know, the market has been geared toward upper income people, and although the prices of some models are selling for a lot less than say the first few generations of Teslas. But it's still serious money, and you know, for people who over the past 3 years we know started buying a lot of used cars, even though the prices are starting to come down as people start to buy new cars again. So I think you're right, Melody. I think there's a long way to go before. The EV phenomenon takes off.
Well, let them come up with a vehicle where it doesn't cost an arm and a leg and our infrastructure. It doesn't support infrastructure. I mean, it's just totally ridiculous. And to push this down our throats at a time when, you know, it doesn't yet fit into the scheme of things. So it's just.
Although I will note, on a recent trek, to and from the eastern shore of Maryland, my wife and I noted at a couple of convenience stores, store chains, a number, I mean, I think a dozen each, of EV charging stations, which hadn't been there just a few months ago. So, you know, in terms of that infrastructure, I know a good chunk of the so-called infrastructure bill that was passed a couple of years ago is to provide funds for that. So I guess money's starting to go out there.
Yeah, well, I think those who manufacture the EVs should supply the charging stations. I don't think it should come from taxpayers' money. And if there, was there anybody charging their vehicles?
I think one of the 12 that I saw had someone standing there.
Yeah.
That's what I saw.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of the cost to replace the batteries, the fire element. I mean, there's so many bad things about these EV vehicles, but it's just a way to get the money into the economy. To me, it's at this point in time kind of a waste of money. But again, it's just like the air industry. Hey, let them use their own money to fix up these airports, and why should it come from taxpayer dollars? We bail them out every chance that, you know, every time they need a bailout, taxpayers bail them out. So let them fix up the airports. Well, they're not going to do that, though. It's just, anyway.
Well, it's a balancing act, though, isn't it? I mean, what happens if they were required to self-fund it all? I mean, maybe there's just more truth in advertising in that sense, but inevitably airfares would skyrocket because they certainly wouldn't absorb those costs. God forbid that shareholders should miss out on a dividend or, you know, the effects of another buyback. So that's my concern about just, you know, the private sector taking care of itself.
We bail them out anyway, so the money goes, you know, it doesn't even make any sense. I mean, you know, so the airfare goes up. Is everyone meant to fly? You know?
No, but that, again, has a multiplier effect, too, you know?
Yeah.
Tourist spots and, you know, the mom and pop beach shacks and... I agree. It's really hard to find. I mean, you might disagree. You might think it's easy to find the balancing point, but you know, it's all a series of trade-offs.
We subsidize the airports. Why should we bail them out then? Let them fail.
Well, that's another story. I don't disagree with
that. They don't get both, but they do. They get everything.
Well,
you know, let them pay 50% of it, you know? So yeah. I don't know.
Issues
that need to be addressed because it's just taken us down to where government creates more debt and it's debt that can never be repaid. So who in the very end gets screwed? It's the taxpayer. It's the people of this country. Even if, you know, so it's eventually
the number one cause of inflation,
you know, so
that increase the money supply to pay the debt. Inflation.
It's in the long run, it's still going to go belly up. I just want it to go belly up sooner than later. Get it done. Get it over so we can start building something, you know. To get us back into a position that, you know, we don't have to beg for people to buy our debts to survive. Our enemies, our competitors around the world to buy our debt to survive. Anyway, the Federal Reserve's top banking regulator expressed caution today about the impact that AI now. That's artificial intelligence, ladies and gentlemen, could have on efforts to make sure undeserved communities have fair access to housing. Well, I think they already did that, didn't they, with giving them some breaks in their purchasing of a home. But AI technology has the potential to get credit to people who otherwise can't access it. How can they not access it? He noted that it also can be used for not so honorable means, specifically to exclude certain communities from housing opportunities through the process traditionally called redlining. National Fair Housing Alliance. While these technologies have enormous potential, they carry risks of violating fair lending laws and perpetuating the very disparities that they have the potential to address, Dave.
Yeah, well, my concern is around this redlining. Barr noted that AI can be manipulated to perform digital redlining, where minority communities in particular are being denied access to credit and certain housing opportunities. Reverse redlining, by contrast, happens when more expensive or otherwise inferior products, lending products, are pushed to these minority areas. So Barr said work being done by the Fed and other regulators on the Community Reinvestment Act will be focused on making sure these underserved communities have equal access to credit. You know, that all sounds good, but I'll tell you what, Melody, the Fed's track record on equality, income equality, or what have you, has been dismal, certainly nothing to be desired. So I think the jury is certainly out on this one. If the Fed's going to be overseeing some aspect of this.
Yeah, but usually undeserved communities, they don't have the ability to pay it back. They're a higher risk. So yeah, they do have a tendency to, you know, and again, there's a lot of talk that FICO scores, and what do they mean anymore? You know, you work hard, you try to get a good score, and then you're penalized.
Now they're a joke, those FICO.
Well, they might be, but that's how, that's what everything has been based on for how many years?
Yeah, far too long.
And that's, how we, I'm not a fan of being scored and having to, sounds too much like China, but you have to start somewhere. But in your lower income communities, the only thing that's going to get them out of that is by working multiple, so bring the jobs back. Hey, what a thought. If we wouldn't have lost all those jobs, maybe we wouldn't have such of a big problem. We all know about the strikes that's going on right now in Hollywood. Some are even saying that Hollywood might be ready to collapse. That might be a good thing. But movie theater operators are the businesses most at risk from from the writers and actors strike. Theaters rely on new releases more so than TV networks or streamers do. If the strikes go on much longer, the pipeline of fresh content could run dry. They were actually saying maybe a year, next year would be when it would be more difficult to there wouldn't be any new programming. While movie production had been muddling along, even with the writer's strike, the actor's strike that began last week changed the game, grinding all film production to a halt. Theater operators like AMC, View Entertainment, Cineworld are only just emerging. They have not recovered. They're still having a hard time recovering from the shutdowns during the pandemic. So, in a prolonged strike in which new theatrical Hollywood tentpole product is spread more thinly or runs dry, these companies could face earnings, cash flow, and, of course, liquidity pressures, Dave.
Yeah, I want mine if the day of the $100 million Hollywood exec would soon be in the past. The last actor's strike 23 years ago, turn of the century, I like that term. Lasted around 180 days, half a year, 6 months. The current strike goes past the fourth quarter of this year. There are 166 days left in the year. Moody's believes there will be bigger problems in other sectors of the entertainment industry, including the studios and TV networks. But things could certainly get dire before that. Studio chairs themselves said if the work stoppage goes past Labor Day, would have a serious impact on next year's release calendar. For the theater companies, the impact of the strikes isn't likely to be as bad. I mean, we will see. I remember, you know, when Broadway went dark, I mean, there was concern that that might end that industry. Well, look, Barbie and Oppenheimer, blockbusters coming this weekend. Could be the industry's last gasp before the strike.
We'll have to wait and see. We'll be right back because we know we're heading into the break.
It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me. Come on, babe. Don't say babe. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, one more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client businesses. Final segment. You know where to get her. 1-800-375-4188. Now, in a dream scenario, consumer demand would ease gradually, not fall off a cliff, to put downward pressure on inflation, as the Fed hopes to do. Well, the latest retail figures show that that could actually be playing out. Retail sales rose just 0.2% last month. That's a sign that shoppers continue opening their wallets, but at a more moderate pace than in the past. Online retailers, which were up 2%, furniture and electronics stores up 1%, were among the categories that saw the largest monthly increase in spending. But spending fell 1-2% at department stores, building material supply stores, gas stations, sporting goods shops, and food and beverage stores. Economist Bill Adams at Comerica notes that consumer spending was likely a net tailwind to the economy in this second quarter. Well, in that second quarter, excuse me, we're now in the third, mostly offsetting headwinds from inventory destocking and an increased trade deficit. And some experts are saying our money is not quite as money as we might think. Unless, I'd add, you own physical gold and silver. Well, the federal government's trying to change that to make cash more real, more useful, more accessible. The platonic ideal of money for many Americans is cash in your pocket. It can be transferred anytime, anywhere, to anyone irreversibly. And the recipient always receives the exact same amount of money as you are spending. The money in your checking account, by contrast, it's less reliable. It basically goes into hibernation every weekend, every evening, and all weekend. It can also take 3 days or sometimes longer to arrive somewhere you're sending it. FedNow, the Fed's instant payment system, is arriving later this month to complement a private sector real-time payment system from the clearinghouse. Both of them work 24/7, transfer money in seconds, and make checking accounts significantly more money-like, assuming they're not frozen, of course. But don't expect any kind of fireworks when FedNow arrives. It's only going to be supported by 57 organizations nationwide to start with. And many of them are going to be in receive-only mode, which is to say their customers will be able to receive money but not send it. In countries like India and Brazil, the central bank mandated use of the official instant payment system. But use of FedNow, by contrast, entirely optional. Well, that said, now that the Fed is encouraging uptake, expect instant payments to become much more popular in the coming years. Modern Treasury CEO Dmitry Dadyumov said, when the Fed says something happens, it happens. Banks don't say no to the Fed. Well, we won't parse that too much other than to say, well, I kind of agree with the second part of that, but the first one, not necessarily so. Whatever the case, instant payments aren't great for banks. After all, if your money leaves your account on Monday and arrives in your vendor's account on Thursday, either the sending or receiving bank is earning interest in the interim, but not passing interest on to either customer. 24/7 payments also exacerbate the risk of bank runs. Kevin Jacques, a partner at Coda Capital, says when you can transfer up to $1 million out of your account instantly, even when the bank is closed, it means the rate of deposit flight could be a lot faster. And peer-to-peer payments are also commonly used for illicit activities, money laundering and the like, which naturally worries banks, some more than others. On top of that, FedNow isn't a consumer-facing product like Venmo or Zelle. It's more behind-the-scenes plumbing. So in order for the U.S. to catch up to, say, India, a lot of financial service companies are going to have to do a lot of work and spend big sums of money, even at the small institutions, updating their apps, their infrastructure, and training their people to support the new technology. In the first instance, expect FedNow to be used mostly by large corporations. Gig economy employers like to be able to pay workers immediately and per job, for example. Even employees with full-time jobs very much appreciate being able to get paid everything they're owed today rather than waiting until the 15th or the 30th of every month. FedNow's a huge advance in U.S. payments plumbing, but it's still likely to be a couple of years before you're able to, say, move money instantly from a savings account at one bank into a checking account at another. Even as the Fed is speeding up money with FedNow, another arm of the government, the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, is slowing down other kinds of money, making them more expensive to move and generally less money-like. Currency comes to mind. Large corporations keep enormous sums of money market mutual funds since they have far too much cash to be covered by FDIC insurance. These money market funds are a bit like banks. They offer intraday liquidity to their customers, except the securities they invest in are not nearly as liquid. Thus, the scene is set for the money market equivalent of bank runs, where customers dash to get their money out first. While early customers exiting the funds are paid out with the proceeds from the sale of liquid securities like treasury bonds, leaving the slower customers overexposed to illiquid securities at times of great stress. Gary Gensler explained in May, the liquidity mismatch at money market funds is an inherent part of how they operate. Remember, the government had to step in 2008 to rescue money market funds, also again in 2020. Well, the SEC is now proposing that whenever a money market mutual fund sees withdrawals of more than 5% of its assets in a single day, it will have to impose an exit fee on customers exiting the fund. Beware, caveat emptor. On the other side, Eric Pan, the CEO of the Investment Company Institute, which represents money market fund providers, says the SEC proposed fee is expensive and clunky. Funds will now be forced to have 25% of their assets be highly liquid, up from just 10%, which on its own should soften liquidity concerns. Despite exit fees and liquidity minimums, the market likely correctly assumes that the government will step in again to bail out money market funds in case of any dire emergency. The bottom line, the real problem is that Congress is unwilling to make money market funds implicit government support explicit. Sound familiar? Recent FDIC issue with the three failed banks. If it were explicit, the government could charge for access to the Fed's discount window and other sources of liquidity. As it is, the SEC is forced into second-best solutions like these nuisance exit fees, which probably won't even work in a major crisis. Well, my latest What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog, which comes out Fridays, is a piece called Vibes Versus the Numbers. If you spend a lot of time looking at economic data, you may think it looks like happy days are here again. Inflation back to a mere 3%, headline employment near 50-year lows. Heck, even GDP remains in positive territory. Cue the music? Not just yet. As Axios's Neil Irwin writes, most Americans don't see it that upbeat way. He says American consumers view the economy are colored by their politics as much as the actual state of the economy itself. He believes a crucial issue for next year's elections, coming already, oh my gosh, not to mention the national psyche, surrounds whether today's solid economic backdrop will start to translate into a broader sense of things on the right track. Well, the economy is in a good place if you only follow the money. Government numbers do show price increases are falling. Again, headline unemployment, not counting discouraged job seekers, is low, and economic growth is around its average of the 2010s. Look at the misery index. It's a handy, if simplistic, measure of economic distress that stands at about 6.6%. The misery index is a measure of economic distress felt by everyday Americans owing to joblessness plus the increase in cost of living. The index is calculated simply by adding the Labor Department's seasonally adjusted headline U3 unemployment rate to the inflation rate measured by the CPIU. Because unemployment and inflation detract from a person's economic well-being, their combined value is meant to serve as a useful indicator of overall economic health. Thus, the higher the index, the greater the misery felt by the average American, and vice versa. The original misery index was popularized by economist Arthur Ochon in the 1970s after the development of stagflation, which we know is simultaneous high inflation and high unemployment. Yes, today's index is about 16% higher than just before the pandemic, that is 5.8% in February 2020, but it's lower than the so-called boom times of 2000, and it's fallen substantially from its pandemic high of 15 in April 2020, and more recently, 12.66 just last June. As Irwin points out, most measures of how people feel about the economy remain fairly subdued even after a big jump in June. For instance, Gallup Economic Confidence Index has rebounded from recent lows last summer, but it remains a lot lower than it ever was during the 2010s or the 2001 recession. In the University of Michigan's monthly or periodic consumer sentiment surveys, another example of growing household pessimism. From a peak of 101.1 in February 2020, sentiment has steadily fallen to 59.2 in May this year. Declining numbers from 100 show growing pessimism, while rising numbers show growing optimism. Either way, polling about the economy is extremely polarized these days. Now, there's a big surprise, right? Well, survey question along the lines of, do you think economic conditions are good or bad, is answered more along the lines of, do you like the current president or not? Take October 2020, for example, a few weeks before President Trump lost re-election. Republicans' economic sentiment was a whopping 26 points higher than Democrats in the University of Michigan sentiment survey. In February 2021, just weeks after Biden took office, Republicans rated the economy 28 points worse. The pattern occurred between the parties around the 2016 and 2008 elections, when partisan control of the White House shifted hands. The country seems to be experiencing something similar today, too. In June survey, sentiment among the D's was 84.3 versus 46.4 among R's. That's a 38-point differential, 61.5 among independents. Not surprisingly, the survey's index of expectations for the next 12 months shows a widening of sentiment, 85-plus among D's and 43-plus among R's. Irwin believes Americans' attitudes about the economy and Biden's approval ratings are being driven both by bad vibes and the lingering trauma of the pandemic. But it's not all about politics. Other factors like age are driving a divergence in consumer sentiment, too. Cheyenne Devon says for millennials and Gen Z homebuyers, purchasing a starter home may soon be nothing more than a Norman Rockwell-esque memory. According to the National Association of Realtors, almost 40% of Americans between the ages of 25 and 44, the millennials, who bought homes last year say they plan to stay in them for 16 years or more. And for the Gen Zers, homebuyers between the ages of 18 and 24, that number jumps to an astounding 48%. Uh-oh, parents. Be prepared to host your children for much longer than you thought. I know my wife and I are. But we love them, don't we? Remember when the average family turned over their home in as little as every 7 years? Yeah, I know. That's so last century. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Greg Hunter here tomorrow with Melody and Butch. Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs will be Melody and Butch's guest on Friday, and we'll talk about AI and viruses. Thanks always to our sterling production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there and have a good evening. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.